Hello, everybody out there in improv parenting land. We are back for another episode of Improv Parenting Podcast with the lovely Katie Chase from Studio LOL in Los Angeles and the East Coast now and soon the world. Hello, Miss Katie Chase. Will you tell our audience more about you?
Sure. Hello. I'm so glad to be here. So I own Studio LOL, which is a children's improv program. We started in LA 11 years ago. So I've been doing that as a full-time career, working with kids and teenagers, bringing them improv. And so even though we were in LA for so long, and now 2020 has made us everywhere because we're doing online programming, I've met so many awesome kids. But even with that LA foundation, we never were a place that was, you know, a bunch of child actors or aspiring comedians. We really had a heart for bringing improv to everyday kids who need it for their human being skills. So I've taught kids from cripplingly shy to, hey, my kid's like quirky and isn't good at sports. Like, we can't find their thing. I keep trying to sign them up for stuff. Nothing clicks. To, hey, my kid is getting in trouble at school all the time because they're the class clown and they do not know where to channel that. So I just have a passion for taking all those kinds of kids and using improv as a tool to work on those skills.
I love that, Katie. Oh my gosh. Now, was that ingrained in you just as a human being, or do you have a child development background or a teaching background, or did you just know that's your passion?
Well, I got lucky to find that passion so young. My husband and I wanted to start a business, and we were like, well, what are we good at? Well, we're good with kids and we're good with improv. And then, so that kind of worked out. But I do come from a family of basically all public school teachers. And so all my jobs as a teenager and a young person in school were, you know, nannying or coaching cheerleading or always kind of around kids and in that world. And then I went to acting school in New York and really clicked with improv. I remember I went to this serious acting school and took this conservatory for 2 years. And then by the end of it, I was like, okay, I think the only thing I liked was that one half semester of improv. or maybe it was the only thing I was good at. I don't know. But so I just knew that those two things clicked from a really young age. So we kind of turned it into a business.
Oh, that's so cool. Now, did you meet Ryan, your husband, on the improv stage? Were you like in the stage, you know, the top performing main stage Harold show? And he's like, ooh, she's cow.
Oh my gosh, it's even weirder. We got cast on my first job in LA. It was a commercial for like a cable company. We got cast as husband and wife because we kind of look alike. And then we met at the callback, and then he was funny. I was a nervous wreck. So he kind of booked the job, but I just looked like him. So that's how I got to join SAG and have a first job. And then we did that. And we were husband and wife washing dishes and like arguing about the cable bill or something. So that's how we met.
Oh, cute. And now you guys get to do that in real life.
Yeah, so much dishes and arguing. It's awesome.
It's all about dishes and arguing. If you can't do dishes and argue right, you're just not going to, it's not going to work. I'm reading about you I'm reading you're here on the East Coast near me, and I'm very excited about that. Tell me where you are.
Yes. So in 2020, our life went crazy, like everybody's, but we actually moved 3 weeks before a pandemic across the country, made a choice to come raise our kids in my husband's hometown of Tallahassee, Florida. It's just kind of this lovely little part of town. It's just very country and quiet, and that was kind of our dream. To raise our kids somewhere like that, how we grew up instead of in the city. So we made that jump and we were unpacking and a pandemic happened. And we had this, you know, it's so funny because you make all these plans. We had this big plan of kind of keeping our LA studio going. And then we were going to open one here and really make that a model for franchising, all these big plans for 2020. And it just went in the dumpster. We had to close our LA studio. So much unfolded. And we just had to truly dig into our spirit of yes and our spirit of like, okay, well, we can make anything work. Like we're improvisers. If anybody can get through these enormous challenges this year. And I wrote a letter to our students that I really believed, which was like, if anybody can have the resilience to get through all this stuff that sucks very much, it's us. It's us. It's the improvisers. We know how to roll everything we sort of thought was going to go one way went another way. We know how to immediately respond and shift gears. So that's what we did.
I love that. It's such an important tool. We call it in child development, we call it resilience. Okay. Mm-hmm. So, and it's something we want to impart on our kids. So, which leads me kind of down leads the discussion in that path of how does improv support kids in their development? And that's a lot of times like what parents have a hard time understanding, even though you can go to YouTube and pull up dozens of TEDx talks and TED talks about how improv influences science, influences business and sales, healthcare, all of these industries. Yet the most common sense one in my mind, and probably yours, is parenting. Like, why aren't parenting? Yeah, okay, pause. Have you seen Yes Day?
Yeah, I haven't seen the movie, but I need to, and I've seen the trailer and I get it and I'm all about it.
Which is what I thought. Okay, and I'm not trashing Yes Day, but it's like, no, 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 no. And then, oh, let's have one day of yes. Mm. And I'm like, what? What? Okay, why don't we reframe that and go, why don't we say yes every day? Can we find a way to say yes every day instead of like being no all the time and then just one day of yes? Like, that's weird to me.
Right. Yeah. And it's interesting because before I had kids, I have a 5 and a 3-year-old now. And before I had kids, had I heard you or someone say something like that, I would have been like, yikes. Whoever is saying that is going to have a monster child on their hand. Like, you can't tell kids yes all the time. And like, I didn't really get the positive parenting thing. Like, that was all really wacky to me. But I think, you know, your listeners are parents and you get that when it comes down to it, or unless you have an easy kid. I have 2 types of kids. I have one that is just really kind of textbook easy right now, or so far. She's 3. You tell her to do something, she just does it. She's very empathetic. Like, she gets human emotions. She's concerned about mine. I'm concerned about, like, we're just like gel. Okay. And then my 5-year-old, which maybe some of your listeners have a kid like this, they just don't do anything how you thought it was going to be. And then you have to kind of reevaluate. Because you've spent some years doing what you thought, which is like, well, no, because I said so type parenting, or I don't know, just how you thought it might go, or even what I thought worked in a classroom as a teacher. You kind of just stumble through that not working for a kid. And then you start to be more open-minded, like, yes, I do find ways to give my son choices and find where I can say yes to him. And most importantly, find all of the playfulness in parenting that I hadn't expected I was going to be so concerned with finding on a daily basis.
Yeah, it's so interesting to hear you, an improviser and a teacher, say that, because it's so true. I think, and what this is the other part of what I do, I'm also a licensed hypnotherapist. And a lot of times as parents, we're not only meeting a kid where they're at, we're also meeting them with our baggage, which is this emotional fog, this attachment, all of these things that we bring to the table. It's not like, hey, I'm your improv teacher and you just, you know, we just do this. Mm-hmm. It's more like, I'm emotionally invested in you. So the way this turns out has a lot to do with the way I do it. So this, if I better not screw up. So there's yes. So much pressure, like, and then also the feeling of like, am I supposed to do something here? Am I doing this right? Oh my gosh, let me call somebody because I don't know what to do. This kid's freaking out. And I feel bad for parents because I know that feeling. And that's kind of how I ended up being a parent support provider, because parents would naturally just ask me because I was their kid's teacher. And so we'd have these wonderful conversations. And I thought, I really enjoy helping parents understand kids, where they're at developmentally, what's going on in their brains, you know, and
yes.
Yeah. Find that.
And it's such a different thing. I was just thinking, you know, when you're teaching, you know, I'm in a room full of a lot of kids. It's this concentrated thing that I'm doing. Mm-hmm. But when you're parenting, it's, there are these humans that live in your house all day and all night. There's no break ever. It's not the same. So parenting really isn't like anything else, any other way of working with kids or anyone who thinks they know kids or really get it until you have this thing. And then yes, all the emotional baggage. And if you're like me and a perfectionist and want to get everything exactly right, so when it's not going well, you over research it and you're just beating yourself up. Like, why aren't they listening? Or why is this happening? Those are all like the perfect storm. But for me, they've been the perfect storm to kind of come to these ideas that you're talking about over the last year or two, and trying to figure out what the heck I'm doing with my son in particular. But what's come up is one, playfulness, you know, and even just getting him to listen about things, or, you know, we went through all kinds of things like my socks are uncomfortable, I'm not putting on socks phase suddenly was solved when I was like, okay, here's the game. We cannot think about your socks going on your toes. We have to think about tiny frogs and they are juggling bananas. What else are, okay, so what are we thinking about? And so then it's the, what are we thinking about game? And he comes up with all this weird stuff. And by the end, he's like cackling, falling into my lap, hugging me. And he's not that type of affectionate child. So that's a big deal. So that's been a huge thing is finding, and it seems obvious because I do comedy for a living, but like finding playfulness and humor in my home with my own kid who I'm always around. That's a different thing.
That is perfection. That's beautiful. And that is exactly what I'm talking about. Because when you said this kid falls into your lap and just loves on you, and it's really not his style, what you did there was you bridged a connection. You got a connection with him. And that is what we learn in improv before kiddos, is we're supposed to do that. We're supposed to connect. We're supposed to count to 10 as a warm-up. And if we count on top of each other, we start again. Mm-hmm. You just know that we are the hive mind. And I feel like if families kind of accepted that mindset, like what you just put out there, like my kid's struggling and I don't want to turn it into a power struggle, so why don't I play a game with him?
Yes. So I've used that with all kinds of things with both my kids, but especially with him. And it is what makes him melt and then connect. Yeah. And then we have this beautiful sort of relationship now that wasn't there, that I wanted, that I was trying to be like, no, put your socks on. Like, so trying to like, but you can't find it, and you know, in the not right ways, but also another byproduct of it is that he listens a lot better now because he's connected to me and trusts me. And like, we're pals. So the connection is what did it, not the forcing him to listen or strong holding it or something. Not the because I said so stuff.
Yes, that is the aha moment. Connection is always the cure. So your kid's melting down, your kid's saying, I hate you, your kid's like throwing stuff across the room. Connection. Hi, honey, I'm here. What's going on? That people is that. That's it. That's it. That's the bottom line.
And I think so too.
You just proved it. You didn't even know coming in here. I'm kidding. But yeah, that's so beautiful. What an amazing testimony.
Yeah, it's been a really good year. And also kind of he's growing up, but I'm just learning to actually use my improv skills. I was also thinking one of the other things I kind of have leaned into is I say to myself, like, don't control the scene, because I know what that means as an improviser, where you don't, when you're doing improv on a stage, you don't get to just say where the whole scene goes. It's a scene with another person and you both are contributing. So that has been sort of my mantra in my brain, like, okay, Katie, stop controlling the scene. You know, where in just tiny things like, okay, we have a free day. I decided we're going to go to this thing at the library, whatever it is. I've decided something. This did happen recently. We walked outside and it was caterpillar season. So there were hundreds of caterpillars all over our driveway. And it was like, okay, And my kids were just so engaged with that and grabbed their magnifying glasses. And it was like, great. No, we're doing Caterpillar Day because this just happened. So like following the scene and letting your kid lead a little bit and life lead a little bit instead of like, no, guys, get away from those caterpillars. Get in the car. We have this thing at the library I don't care about.
You've got this thing that I have to, you know, this schedule, this itinerary that I've created.
Or like them, or I used to be really particular about picking out their clothes and stuff. And even my daughter, even at like age 18 months, she'd be like, I am getting myself dressed. I know what I want to wear. And when I gave up that fight, like I'm not controlling that. That is not, so my life is worse. And so is yours when I decide I'm going to try to really control that area for you. Yeah. So just finding those ways to just lean into that improv skill of not controlling.
Yeah, from a developmental standpoint, kids at that age, from the early ages till up until about 7 or 8 years old, they're just trying to navigate that control. What do I control and what don't I control? Mom's always telling me what to do, but what do I get to say? My kid would out loud say that. What do I get to decide? And, you know, how come we always do what you want to do? And I was like, huh, is that the case? Let me look at that, you know, because I want to make sure I hear what she's saying, because she is telling me something important. And it's not filled with a lot of, you know, social filter or a lot of social garbage that we've all, you know, kind of compiled over the years. So it's really important to hear her voice for me. And it was very interesting to get that critique.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. I'm controlling the scene, just like you said. But yeah. I think parents mistake yes and parenting or improvised parenting for yes day. And it's not like yes day. It's not about yes to everything. It's about how do you say no? How do you agree with them in a way, you know, because saying yes, but saying yes, this, I always use the cookie example. Oh, mom, I want a cookie, but it's bedtime, honey. I want a cookie, and then the freak out. And you're like, I understand you want a cookie. And guess what? It's not really a good idea to have a cookie right now. And your body wouldn't be really happy if you had a cookie right now. But guess what? I'm going to take it, put it over here, and we'll have it sometime tomorrow. So when you wake up, we'll talk about when you have it tomorrow. So you're saying, yes, you can have that cookie, just not right now, because it's not a good idea. That's what yes and parenting is. Yes, I hear you. Yes, I see you. Yes. And we can do that at a better time for you. Does that make sense?
Yes. And it's just so much about not shutting them down. Yeah. I've learned that not shutting. I'm also not interested anymore in shutting down their feelings. You know, I'm in a stage of parenting where big emotions are in the house a lot, big tantrums and things. So not shutting down all their wishes and also holding firm boundaries, not giving the cookie. That's the thing is we're not giving the cookie. That's never happening. So then it's like, so how much are you going to enjoy life with this person under your household or not? Cause they're not having the cookie either way. So this can either be super miserable for everyone or like a super fun thing where we're all, kind of getting along and functioning and connecting as best we can, not perfectly every day all the time, but coming at those interactions with that goal of connection.
Yeah, the goal of connection. And I think that the rules of improv really put it there for you in a way that helps you navigate it. And there's so many people that I talk to and they're like, improv changed my life. And, you know, I took an improv class and it changed the way I deal with relationships. I'm like, yeah, it's so true. But parenting, there's this kind of like, you know, heels in the dirt. I've got to do it this way. This child has to learn. And, you know, like, so there's kind of a weird misnomer about parenting in this kind of lovely, joyful, flexible way that makes it seem not serious, like it's not real parenting. And I don't know, how do you feel about that?
For sure, yeah. I mean, lovely and joyful, those words popped out because that's what we all want. Maybe if there's someone listening who's not buying what we're talking about, maybe they are buying, like, yes, I do want a lovely, joyful household. an experience with my kids. I don't want the nagging and the everyone's mad at each other, or the constantly someone saying no and fighting about it. Like, we don't want that. This is life. I don't want that life. I don't want that. So yeah, I don't know. Being open-minded to ways of parenting that can preserve some of that lovely joyfulness are what kind of changed my tune on things, which is so funny because, yeah, I have done this a long time, and as far as done improv with kids, but again, parenting is its own beast. But I feel like you had asked about some of the benefits of kids doing improv in the first place, which is more my area of expertise.
Yeah.
it's funny because my son is 5, so he's done a couple of my classes and he really loves it. He's kind of a class clown type, so it's a natural fit for him. But it's interesting. So I see kids come in and we're there to work on how to be a good human being. So all of that can be done in improv. You have to listen to another person. You have to connect. You have to make things not about you. Every kid will come into my class and try to initially just be like so funny and quote YouTube videos and just throw out non sequiturs. And
doesn't that happen in grown-up improv classes too?
Yes. Yes. And it's beautiful because no one laughs. And it's a really quick, easy lesson to learn that you can't just make yourself hilarious. I mean, I guess if you're doing stand-up comedy, that's a different beast, but in improv, it's a team sport. Mm-hmm. So for all the same reasons that parents can see the benefits of a team sport, I see those in improv as well.
I heard you say that earlier, and I think that's so important. And maybe you didn't say it on here, but you said it on your video on your website. And please, everybody, please go visit Katie Chase's website, studiolol.com, to see what I'm talking about. And please elaborate on those things, because that to me is beautiful. I want to hear more about that.
Yeah. And if people go to the site, there's a little ebook that I put together this year that goes through sort of the ABCs of my improv rules for kids that are really life rules for kids. And so there's 26 of them of the topics on this.
Life rules?
What, I'm sorry?
26 life rules?
Yeah. improv tips that are great applied to kids' lives, I should
cool.
say. And so I have a lot to say about this topic, but yes. So communication skills, even kids who are, I'll get a lot of kids who are in these highly gifted schools, math or science programs. And their parent is like, I have to round them out. Cause we've all even had a doctor who come in and we're like, yikes. And we choose a different practice, because being an actual human being who can make eye contact and feel warm and friendly and carry on conversation and kind of ping pong it back and forth matters mm-hmm. in every job, in every friendship, in every relationship. So that's what we do in improv class. And it's so true. This is so interesting, the idea of parents taking an improv class.
Yeah.
Either with their kids or not. But it's funny, I've tried to bring home, I'll always encourage our students to bring home improv games and kind of play them at the dinner table or play them while you're bored in the car. Mm-hmm. And so my son has a few that we've done. Like, we have one, you got to get out of that chair. So we'll put a chair in the middle of the room. And then one person gets in the chair and the other person says, you got to get out of that chair. And they're like, why? And then you make up a trick. Like, the chair is on the train tracks. The train's coming. You got to move. And no matter what, the person in the chair has to freak out and pretend they believe it and get out of the chair and go to the end of the line. So they're like, a train. Oh no. And then that person who did the trick takes the chair and they're like, yes, I tricked them. And then they get tricked out. Over and over. So
it's
what
super fun. Oh my God.
Kids love little, this is for really young kids, but they love it because it's so silly. And I love it because they are forced, not forced, but in this game, the joke is it's most funny when they comply when they, when even they're like, oh my, it's not funny if they're like, no, there's not a train like that. There's no train on these tracks. And also I love trains. I would love to be hit by a train. Right. That won't work as well as them being like a train going with the thing. Like, even if it wasn't their idea or they don't agree with it, they're going to lean into it. Sometimes I think of it as like, I'll tell kids this, like, go with a punch and you don't get hurt. I think that's a fighting thing, you know, like, don't stand there tough if you're getting hit, like, kind of lean with it, roll to the ground. So, but that game teaches that, and he really likes that. But also I'll notice he'll just want to make up improv games. He'll be like, Mom, let's do some improv games. And I'm like, okay, we're having our special time, right? It's just me and him. My phone is in the other room. My trick for that is that my phone, my kids love this. My phone goes into my underwear drawer. So it's like my husband and I will, like, that's really special time. If the phones are in there, they're in closed drawers, even then behind a closed door, so far away. But so he'll be like, let's do some improv games. And then he's just like making up things that are not improv games, but sort of are. And I'm just going with it. And he's having the time of his life. He's like, I'm going to put on one of my costumes and you're going to say what the name of this character is as fast as you can or whatever. And it's just so clearly about him wanting to lead play and be in control of our little special time. And so, yeah, I was just mentioning that to encourage parents that, like, you don't have to know a perfect set of improv tools or something, but the concept of approaching special time with play and an openness for them to lead silliness and being on board for it is where it's at.
Absolutely, Katie. That's what we call in child development, we call that the child directed play. And that special time, parents think, well, it's gonna be this long time. I don't have time for it. And basically, you know, 10 minutes a day is what your kids, they just need that special one-on-one time to really connect with you and for to really be seen and heard by you. That's it. It's not like a major big investment, but it had, the dividends are tremendous. Like I was saying, I did I was on an educator website last night speaking about this. And I was saying that a lot of times parents are stacking their schedules so much and that connection piece is kind of down here in the when, if we get to it section category. Mm-hmm. And I said, the idea is to move it all the way up to here because when you start with connection, everything else just falls into place.
And that's so smart. Yeah.
And like what you said, your son listened, he was more willing to listen when you connected with him. Because intrinsically, they want to please us. That is their internal instinct, is to please us. And and you know, I think we screw it up. You know, kids don't come out of the womb punching us. They don't. They don't come out of the womb like, I hate you. They just don't. You know.
I don't know. I'm questioning that logic for maybe my son, but I'm just kidding. It is so true that, you know, to value that time. And also recently I was thinking about how sometimes we escape it even when we're available for it. Like my husband and I have started calling it backyard at 5 o'clock time, where it's like, it's kind of golden-y. The air is just perfect. We both kind of finished up or are in between something we needed to get done. We haven't started prepping dinner and we just end up outside, like in the hammock, and the kids are running around and nobody's fighting. And everything is just like, whoa, in this moment, everything is so good and so peaceful. And I will notice my instinct to be like, well, got to prep dinner. Or he'll notice his instinct to be like, well, I'm going to get some work stuff done while they're fine. And it's like, no, let's breathe. And this is the thing we're after. This is the moment. So let's not move on from it. That's also such an improv thing. Like, we're going to sit and be present in this special family time or special one-on-one time and not, I think we can find those free moments and then run away from them on accident.
I think it's true. And I think it's built into us. And in some ways, there's a part of us that resists it because we feel guilty, like we don't feel comfortable playing anymore, which is really sad, even as improvisers. Because I will confess here amongst everyone, and I've had this conversation with fellow moms, like when my kid asked me to play dolls, I'm like, no. inside I'm like, I've got to do this. I've got this other thing, you know? So dumb. Like, why do I do that? It doesn't make any sense. I love playing with dolls. I love the American Girl dolls. They have all that little stuff. That's so cute. But then there's those days where I'm like, oh, no, anything but that. I don't know if you're there yet with your dog.
Oh, yeah. There are certain things, and there's things that aren't my thing, like dad with the Legos, they are the marble run, and I just don't know how to like build a marble. I'm like, I don't want to do your marble run.
I love it. So, that's my wheelhouse. I might be the dad. I'm like a single mom, so I might like gravitate towards the dad stuff, science, math, marble runs. That's all.
That's awesome. Yeah. But yeah, I think when I try to reframe it, like, well, what I'm interested in is connection right now. So it doesn't matter. I will literally sit there and just hold one marble while he builds the marble run. He has the experience that we're doing it. I have the experience that I'm sitting, being present. I'm not doing anything else. And hopefully just seeking a little bit of connection that day to kind of build up that connection meter in him so that we're on a good path. I mean, it's just like that needs refilled every day so that we're all functioning okay.
It's so true. And it's so perfectly said. I think that's really, it's incumbent on parents to understand that the simplicity of that, because that's all it is. It's just that. It's just being quiet in the moment and following your kid's lead. Why is it so hard? Why do we struggle with that? You know, why do we resist it so much? It's beautiful. It's super important to them and to us, to their well-being, to our well-being, you know? And I don't know that if I could impart anything to the world about parenting, that would be it right there. What you just said. Beautiful.
It is good. Yeah. And I think it also just, for me, those moments, time kind of pauses, which is all that I want in this stage of life. I mean, a 3 and a 5-year-old are a peak cuteness. So it's only going downhill for me. So just especially at this stage, but then always over these 18 years, it's like anything, any moments that kind of slow us all down to just be here in this parenthood journey and just know that we were here, you know, because we're going to blink and the kids are gone. And then we're the lady at the grocery store saying like, it's going to go so fast to some other mom. So I always think about that I'm like, this is it. This is time. This is, I'm in it. I'm in my motherhood and it's important to me too. So those connection moments of 5 o'clock in the backyard or holding a marble while I stare at my kid building it is like just a reminder to pause and be in it and be present for it. So it hopefully slows down a little bit.
Very wise words. Very wise words. I love it. And I want to ask you, since, you know, I was on this call with educators yesterday and I was talking about improv games to use in the classroom. And I thought, is anybody out there doing that for teachers? Because our teachers really could use some help.
Yes, mm-hmm. I'm trying to tackle this and I'm having such a classic working mom thing where I'm so pulled between like all these ideas that I have and also like, especially during a pandemic, just really needing to show up as a mom with so much of my time lately. But one thing I've zoomed in now to virtually into an in-person classroom and pre-pandemic just showing up in classrooms doing this work. Mm-hmm. And what's awesome is that I can model it and teach games and model it and then leave. And a teacher can then have watched that, learned from me and then split them off into groups and they can spend half a day doing improv. So I want to figure out how to replicate that or get that into more schools because it's so important. But yes, so
I'll chat with you on camera about that because, you know, it seems like such a big project, but I think it's just giving the teachers the tools, you know, like having been a teacher and you've coming from this whole teacher ancestry. I mean, we know that there's peak times in the day when kids are like out of their minds. And a great way to settle them down is to front load them with these improv games that they can just pull out of a hat and go, okay, now we're going to play pass it on for 5 minutes and then we're going to get right back to work. So, okay, Joe, start, pass it on to do and go around the room, pass it on, done. Okay, let's get back to work.
Yes. Oh my gosh. If they could have a bag of 10 of those, if every teacher could just have 10 of those,
right,
be so helpful for them. And then also, I think one thing I noticed, I was doing one of these this year, and I'm already, you know, speaking to kids, they're in masks, I'm zoomed in, everything's already heavy. Then they have an active shooter drill in the school.
Right.
All the lights go off. They have to board up the window. They're like, hang on. They leave me on camera. I'm watching these kids board up their own classroom and then get back to their seats. And I'm just on this big screen. And I was like, well, teacher, shall we, can we kind of talk through this, or do I need to be silent? And she was like, well, no, we're allowed to talk. So then I just kind of leaned into some emotion-based games. Like, well, can we all practice, like, everybody heads down. And when I say heads up, you're going to put a huge feeling on your face only, no sounds. And we're just going to, like, blast them. So heads down. Okay, heads up, surprised. Okay, heads down. Heads up, really scared. Heads down. Heads up, really this. And they just physically getting emotions into their bodies.
Yes, moving the emotion out, because we don't want that stuck in, you know, science tells us now that a lot of these feelings and fears get stuck in our bodies.
Mm-hmm.
We do. So doing that is a great way to get that moving and get that out of their bodies.
Yes. And this particular teacher mentioned to me after, she said, you know, especially now in 2021, it's like teachers are being expected to have backgrounds in child psychology and an emotional development and all these things that we don't, but these tools are very simple. Mm-hmm. And could maybe help.
Yeah, this is exactly what I was talking to teachers about last night, and different calming techniques, different mindfulness techniques, easy ones though, not like a big old, you know, ceremony of, okay, now we're going to meditate. Everyone cross your legs. Joe, stop talking. You know, like, no, this is for each child. We teach the skill. We teach, you know, simple rainbow breathing. Breathe out red, breathe in red, and go through the whole rainbow. Change it up, cycle your rainbow, whatever you want to do. It's your meditation. Go ahead, do what you want. I don't know if when you were in LA, your kids were in preschool, right?
Not yet. No, they were like 0 to 3. And I just had them at home.
My kiddo, ever since preschool, has had something called a peace corner. So that's a very familiar concept to her. And I implore parents to have those even in their homes. It doesn't have to be a big deal. A beanbag chair and some books in a basket, like in a little, you know, just a little corner somewhere where they can go quietly and have some me time. Okay.
Yes, for my son, this ended up being his top bunk because we got him a bunk bed and he doesn't sleep up top. Mm-hmm. So one day we just kind of like zenned out the top bunk and like a little lamp that he knows how to turn on and all his favorite little stuffies up there. We put art up around it and he helped do it. And that was huge. He's obsessed with his top bunk of just like a space that's his, that no one else is going up there. We aren't allowed up. But it's interesting because sometimes in some of these moments I've found where he's really softened and found connection, it is like, it's like from a movie. Like, I couldn't have written this. And if someone explained it, I would be like, this is ridiculous. He'd be like, Mom, do you want to see my top bunk? Do you want to go up there? Like, just so obviously being like, okay, you can, I'm like opening up a little bit. I'm cracking open the door to like connect with you and soften and be pals. So that's kind of his thing, is his top bunk.
Oh, that brings me so much joy. Oh my gosh. You know, it's so important, I think, for parents to give their kids that gift of that space, and that's your space. When you're having a hard time, when you don't know how to talk about what's going on with you, you can go there and take a breather, because that's something we need.
That's what I was just thinking.
Yeah. So like teaching him that at this young impressionable age, you're laying the foundation for some really solid well-being and some healthy practices later in life.
Well, it's funny how much we expect out of our kids that we don't, like, I need space to calm down. I get overwhelmed and freak out and I'll go like, I need to take a shower or whatever it is. So then we expect these little babies that are barely alive to be able to cope with things.
Well, I know. And then the bigger kicker is that their brains aren't fully developed yet. So the stuff that's coming out of them is like, they don't even know what they're doing. You know, it kills me when parents say, he knows what he did. Or like when they're infants. I was working at a school here in Pennsylvania and one of the teachers said something. What did she say? Oh, he's mad at me because of this. And the kid was not even two. And I'm like, he's mad at you. Interesting. Yeah. I don't think he even really has that kind of that level of awareness there, but okay. You know, like they imbue these kids with these kind of intentional feelings and this, they're just manipulating me. And it's like, well, okay, let's walk that out a little because a kid is trying to figure out their way in a world. Okay. So they're going to manipulate. They're going to strategize. They're going to figure out how to get what they want. Don't we do that? Don't you want your kid to know how to get what he wants in life? I do. I want my.
And also stay in touch with knowing what he wants too.
Yeah, of course. Because what happens when you're 30? Oh, I don't know who I am. I don't know what I want, you know? We're really seeing it. And we're seeing a lot of mental health issues, not just because of that, but we're seeing that, you know, there wasn't a lot of care given to that emotional, you know, caretaking when they were babies and younger and toddlers, the struggle period up to 7 years old, where they struggle with all of that transition, mm-hmm. you know.
But it is true. I think we sometimes can fall into the trap of taking them so seriously. Mm-hmm. I really can relate to that, where it was like, this tantrum really means, I don't know, just taking it seriously. We're not, like, my daughter came home from preschool today and she was like, I'm not eating my lunch. I hate pasta. I would never eat that. And, you know, I think me as a less experienced parent, which, by the way, I feel so silly talking about some of these topics because I'm like, I'm very aware that I'm 5 seconds into parenting. So anyone listening who has older kids is just more qualified by that. But anyway, but so as a less experienced parent, I would have been like, I would have taken that bait and been like, yeah, she really doesn't want this. And instead, in my mind, I'm just like, oh boy, my silly 3-year-old. I don't take that seriously. I don't take that bait. I'm not like emotionally getting wrapped up in that. I'm like, oh, now feeling so hungry. And then she sits down at the table and starts gobbling it all down and like shimmying her shoulders as she's eating it. And like, because it's so delicious. Like
her yummy food dance.
Yes. And so it's just like, who knows what just happened at preschool that was having some other feeling that she was channeling about the pasta. But so yes.
Yes.
Learning to not take, especially toddlers, quite so seriously, or like put all these heavy intentions on them is key.
It is key. Don't take it so seriously, because if you just step back a little bit and you just see, and you, first of all, getting the information, like, hey, they're 3, their prefrontal cortex just got engaged and it's like brand new. It's like just getting started. So like, they're just trying like cause and effect and reason and all that kind of stuff is just like kind of sparking on and off like one of those long, what do they call those, phosphorescent lights or something? You know,
right.
So you got to give them a lot of grace and a lot of space. You know, I call this part, it's not about the Red Bull. Like the kid's freaking out. I want the Red Bull. I mean, yeah, it's not about the Red Bull. It's something else. So when they're freaking out about a bowl that seems super insignificant, there's something else going on there, you know?
Oh yeah. There's like 12 other things that led up to that.
Yeah. The opposite side of it is like the parent, the panicked parent who's like, okay, I'll get the Red Bull. Oh my God. Yeah. What else? And then the kid's like, I don't want this bowl. It's dirty. You know, it's like, oh, this is all going to go bad fast. You know, like just as an observer, I've seen it happen hundreds of times. And yeah, grace and space, moms, you know, it's just give yourself give yourself the grace, you know, to take that space and go, yeah, she's three. That's what happens. You know?
Yeah.
Don't take it personal. I noticed a lot of parents have that tendency to take things personal. Like, it's not about you. They're like super narcissistic at this age. It's about them always. It's never about you.
Oh yeah. Not, you have not crossed their mind at all in this.
Yeah. I mean, empathy is kind of there as like, well, you know, especially if, you know, they're in, you know, an empathetic environment, or if they're an empath. My daughter is a huge empath, super emotional. My daughter is like that quirky, like painfully shy, but really wonderful when you get to know her. Girl, super smart, math, science. She was a director from birth. She was writing scripts and directing her friends in videos at age 5. But if I were to say, okay, spotlight on you, now go do it. And she's like,
yes. First of all, I love that kind of kid. And second of all, I think it's such a healthy trait, because it's really normal to feel embarrassed by everyone staring at you and asking you to do your thing and really wow us. And I find that some kids are really comfortable with that. And I'm like, is that kid going to be a serial killer?
Oh my God. I'm not even comfortable with that. When people ask me to do stuff on command, I'm like,
No, but I think that's kind of one of the biggest takeaways of improv. In my experience, for kids or for anybody, is like, when we're uncomfortable, which hopefully everyone is slightly uncomfortable. Like, I'm slightly uncomfortable right now talking on a podcast, because like, I've never, you know, it's just weird to be outside. Anything outside of just laying on your couch watching Netflix is like, you're kind of
that's super comfortable. By the way, the new Handmaid's Tale is out. I'm watching it.
So I think that improv teaches us to like be slightly uncomfortable and still function and move forward one step at a time along with someone else, and all of these tools to do that, coming back to resilience. And I've just felt so much like all my improv kids who have grown up doing improv that I know and things like that have been so prepared. Truly, I think that prepared inside for everything that life has thrown this way, from my high school seniors who missed their prom and all the stuff. Mm-hmm. That resilience has been kind of the biggest takeaway from improv class.
Yeah, they say that it was a very important phrase in child development when I was coming up, and a very important phrase to teach to our parents is lean into the uncomfortable, because that's where you're going to be most of the time as a parent. You're going to be uncomfortable. It's going to be hard and it's going to be uncomfortable, but it is what you make it. It doesn't have to be hard. Uncomfortable isn't painful. This is a conversation I have with my daughter a lot of times. She'll say, oh, that hurts. And I'm like, does it hurt or is it uncomfortable? You know, because it's hard to tell the difference when mm-hmm. you're young. You don't know, like, it just feels uncomfortable. It feels wrong. It doesn't feel right. And it's okay to be uncomfortable. This is something I tell her all the time. It's okay to be uncomfortable. And that's where we grow, in that discomfort.
Yes.
The discomfort.
It's such an important skill. And in some ways, I think like generationally, I think my generation was raised not to ever feel uncomfortable. I think emotionally, especially mm-hmm. that it's about being happy and being comfortable and everything's good. And if there's disappointment, let's fix it. But to just sit in being uncomfortable isn't something I was used to. It's like a torture situation, but I try to allow space for my kids to be uncomfortable and me not fix it, like, all the time, especially if it's just boredom, because that's a perfect opportunity to be uncomfortable and turn it into creativity and stuff. But
absolutely.
But yeah,
it's, you know, the phrase we use is, oh, you're bored. Wow, you're really lucky to be bored, because that's, you know, where you get to figure out what to do. Like, you get to use your imagination and figure out what to do. That's super cool, right? You know, and honestly, like, it's not torture. It's just different. It's different than the way we were raised, you know, and it's different than the way we're built. because we are built to try to fix their problems. And we think that's what parenting is to solve their problems for them. Wait, that's a new concept. Let them figure out how to solve it for themselves. But then as parents, we have to learn, well, what does that mean? How far do we go? Like my kid, when she turned 8, I was like, well, what can you make yourself? If it's something that you can get yourself, I want you to start practicing that because it's an important life skill for you. And you're going to feel really empowered when you can make your own sandwich or, you know, put cream cheese on your own bagel. Like that's going to feel good to you. And she's like, yes. But I didn't like when you do it. And that, so that then she'll do this like, well, don't you want to do stuff for me anymore?
Kids are so good at that.
Yeah. So we have to find that balance, right?
But adulthood, you have to be able to put cream cheese on your bagel, and you also have to be able to know how to be uncomfortable.
Yeah.
Because again, I'm uncomfortable pretty much all day long.
Like life is not comfortable. I'm uncomfortable going to Whole Foods.
Yeah. I mean, all day long, we're having to do things you don't want to do, which is, by the way, I think some of the resistance maybe parents have to sort of yes and parenting or this idea of being really positive and never enforce it. I don't know, whatever negative things people might think about it is like, yeah, but my kid's gonna have to like go to the grocery store and pay their taxes. Like you're always gonna have to do what you don't wanna do. So I guess I would just confirm, like, or at least in my house, that two things can be true. Like we hold boundaries and do things we don't want to do that are uncomfortable for us, and we can do it in a joyful, loving way.
Well, and that's true of improv too. So you have this stage by which you perform on. You have this family by which you live in, you know, and so you build the boundaries or the limits from there. Once you set the limits, then you play. It's not like, hey, it's a free for all, right? Uh-huh. So you call them boundaries and I call them limits, but they are the same thing. And boundaries has more weight to it because as we get older, not being able to set boundaries sets us up for some really maybe challenging relationships down the road.
Mm-hmm.
You know? So we want to impart that on them. It's important. It's, I would say, imperative. And one of the top coping skills that we can offer our child is the understanding of how to set boundaries. My kid has the freedom to say, I don't want to do that. And then we talk about it. You know, a lot of parents say, well, how do I get my kid to fold the laundry? And I'm like, well, whose laundry are they folding? You know, like did your kid want to fold the laundry, or did you just didn't, you know, give that to them as a job? Did they have a say in it? Like, it's more about like, it's not just saying yes to everything your kid wants. It's having a conversation in a relationship with them and saying, okay, I need help with the laundry and I want to teach you a life skill. So you have to front load it. You have to front load it with some intrinsic motivation. This is really going to be important for you one day. And a lot of times kids are really willing participants when they feel like there's something in it for them, you know? And if you're making them fold your laundry and your nasty undies, like, no, they're not going to want to do it. Fold their own clothes. Why would they be folding your clothes? They're not a slave, you know? Like, here's how you fold your clothes. And I'm going to, you know, right now I'm not there with my kiddo. Like I fold them, but I'm letting her put them away. So I bring them up and I put them on she has a rocking chair, put them on the rocking chair, and it's up to her to put them away. And if she doesn't, she's got a messy room, and her room is her room. I mean, I'm not mandating her clean her room or do anything like that. She understands that if it's a messy room, it's your choice and you live in that messy room. It's not my job to clean your room, and it's not your job to clean my room.
Right. Well, I haven't gotten to all of those things quite yet. I'm still at the phase where my kids are in this joyful wanting to help. And like, if there's anything where my husband would be like, Henry, I really need you to help me clean the wheels on the car. Like if they feel like they can help and are really truly needed with a job, they are chomping at the bits. I mean, they want to do every chore right now.
Absolutely. I think when they stop wanting is when we make them, if they don't have a choice in it. And that's why I say, you know, to parents, it's important that they have a say in it, regardless of what it is. Even if it's like, well, my kid doesn't want to do any chores. So then you go, well, we all have to do our share. So which chores do you want? Pick two. That's it. You get a choice. You do get a choice, but you do have to do this. Mm-hmm. So here's the limit. You got to pick two chores, and the freedom, the control is yours of which two chores you want. And then if you have three kids or two kids like you have down the road, you know, the two kids are going to fight over like, I want to take out the trash. No, I want to take out the trash. Okay. So then you guys have, this is a really great learning opportunity of how to solve this, you know, this discrepancy. You both want to do the same chore. Can you come to a compromise on that?
Yeah, we're working on that skill, right?
Right.
The sibling stuff.
Yeah, we're always working on stuff, aren't we? Sibling stuff is real and challenging, and that's a whole nother podcast, isn't it?
Yep.
Oh my gosh. So I look forward to seeing where you guys go, and I'm going to see if my kiddo would be interested in doing an improv class online with you guys, because I think it's super fun and I love what I see on your website. Will you tell all of our viewers out there how they can find you everywhere?
Yes. So everything is on our website, which is studiolol.com, like laugh out loud. You can get to everything from there. That's it. StudioLOL.com.
Awesome. Katie Chase, thank you so much. What a pleasure and a joy to have met you and talked to you today. And I look forward to knowing more about you, and maybe we'll have you come back on again.
Sounds good.
Once you get that teaching curriculum out there.
I know. I have so much to do.
All right. Take care. Have a wonderful day.
You too.
Bye-bye.